What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action: adopting Strongtowns principles for your neighborhood planning firm. Take a moment to think about your favorite places in your neighborhood. Maybe it's a modest alley that's been transformed to a public space for you and your neighbors. Or maybe it's that once neglected storefront where the city now hosts pop-up events throughout the year. A neighborhood planning firm likely helped create these places. Therefore, there's an important question we must ask ourselves. If our city chooses to work with a neighborhood planning firm, how can we ensure the firm takes a Strongtowns approach to the project? To help us unpack this question, I've got Rick Adamski on the podcast, principal at Ash and Lime, a neighborhood planning firm based out of Dallas, Texas, who, inspired by the Strongtowns Neighborhoods First Report, have used Strongtowns principles to create projects across the country. In this episode, Rick will share with you how you can adopt Strongtowns principles for your own neighborhood planning firm, including how to identify low-cost, high-return projects for a city, how to encourage city leaders to embrace the next increment of development, and most important, how adopting Strongtowns principles for your neighborhood planning firm makes our cities and towns stronger. Enjoy. Rick, what's good, man? How are you today?
Doing pretty well, man.
Happy to hear it.
Nothing too exciting so far.
But we get to sit and chat on the podcast, which is always a joy.
Yeah, no, I've been really excited about this. I've been a fan of Strongtowns for a long time. And as we'll kind of discuss, it's had a big influence upon our business and upon the way that I think as a planner and placemaker. So excited to be talking to you guys and sharing a little bit about our experience and approach.
Yes, likewise, Rick, because we had a great action to cover together today, and that is adopting Strongtowns principles for your neighborhood planning firm. And Rick, this is unlike any episode we've done on It's the Little Things podcast. You know, we focus on actions that concerned citizens can take to make their town stronger. We've talked about actions that elected officials can take, but never actions that neighborhood planning firms can take. So I look forward to hearing what you have to share with us today.
Well, it's interesting that you kind of talk about it that way, because a lot of what we do is really about how we can provide tools and resources to help people to make meaningful change in their own neighborhoods.
Yes.
So when we really come into a place, one of the things we do, in addition to sort of the traditional data gathering and so forth that a lot of more, I guess, conventional planning firms would do, is spend a lot of time working directly with people who might be stakeholders, whether that's people who own property, people who are business owners, elected officials, concerned citizens, city staff, and figure out ways that we can help them to do some meaningful things in their own community. And it tends to be things that are little in terms of effort, relatively, but big in terms of the type of impact that it can potentially make.
That's right. And that's the Strongtowns way. I look forward to digging into it.
Awesome.
So Rick, to get us started, I'd love to start by talking about your firm, Ash and Lime. Mm-hmm. For listeners who may be unfamiliar with the role of a neighborhood planning firm, could you tell us more about the kind of work you and your team do?
Yes. So most of the work that we do tends to be on the scale of the sort of the neighborhood, the district, the corridor, whether that's a downtown or whether that's a commercial neighborhood. Most of the work that we've done tends to be in walkable commercial mixed-use districts, although we've done work in strip malls and so forth as well. What we tend to do is figure out what the community's goals and objectives are, and figure out ways that we can help them reach their goals and objectives. And their bigger goals tend to be pretty simple. We all want places that offer a better experience for people. Communities want to have more business. They want to have more people visiting at different times of the day and night. They want their businesses to do better. And they want higher tax, you know, we have a higher tax base, so that they can afford to provide services for their people. They also want a place that people can enjoy and that gives a positive impression of their downtown. So we look at, or whatever the place might be. So we look at what their goals are and what the steps are that that can help them achieve their goals. And one of the things that we do. I was just going to say, one of the things that we do, you know, since we do take what we might call a strong towns approach, is we focus not only on the things that are longer term, but what might have the biggest impact, you know, sort of what are the next 30 things that you can do that each might make a 1% difference, instead of just what's the one thing you can do that can make a 30% difference, which is a lot of times what cities focus on.
Yes. And that reminds me, as some of our correspondences before we knocked out this podcast, we were talking about, you know, what inspired the model of Ash and Lime. So thinking back to flashback 2013, you just started this firm. How did you and your team choose what kind of firm you wanted to be? And in our emails, you talked about how the Better Brainerd report was a huge inspiration. And listeners, if you're unfamiliar with this report, this is a report that Chuck did, where he went out in Brainerd, and as Rick alluded to, instead of thinking about that one big silver bullet project for Brainerd, he picked, I think it was 10 projects. There was as simple as bike lanes, painting crosswalks, a little bit of tree trimming. So could you elaborate, Rick, for us about how that Better Brainerd report helped give you all the idea of Ash and Lime?
Well, we had a lot of the concepts, the general kind of ideas and concepts and concerns in place from listening to people like Chuck, but from listening to and reading and communicating with a lot of other people who were in many ways saying the same things, although Strong Towns was certainly very, very strong in terms of being able to articulate it and systematize these ideas. When we were looking at sort of how to get started doing work for our clients, we were looking to various plans and tools and firms and so forth as inspiration. And one of the things that inspired us the most was the Better Brainerd, the Neighborhood First report that Chuck put together. So we looked at it, and he thought about these places in a very different way than traditional planning thinks. Because if you look at the report, what they basically say is, what are the needs and what can be done immediately with the resources that we have to help fulfill those needs? So that might be putting in a crosswalk, putting in trees, doing some things that are simple but that are important, and not acting randomly but acting systematically. In other words, really figuring out not just how do we make small investments, but how do we make smart investments? Or what I might later have said is, how do you make the 20% of investments that will make 80% of the difference? Kind of an 80-20 approach to looking at planning. When we looked at this Neighborhood's First report that he had done for Brainerd, and we started saying, what if we went into a district, a neighborhood, a corridor? We did this in a couple of downtowns. And what if we applied this to all of a downtown, so that we take a Better Brainerd approach and we say, what are the 50 or 60 things that you can do that have the chance of making a difference? And then the things that we kind of established as the most immediately impactful opportunities, we fleshed out into more detail. So we started saying, okay, these are the five things that are the most interesting. Here's what the timeline looks like. Here's what the funding looks like. Here's the partners we figured out to pull together so that this can be done as quickly as possible.
I love that, Rick. So take us through the process. You know, you read this Neighborhoods First reports, you buy into the idea that we should spread our risk, try out 10 low risk, possibly high return projects to do. What does that actually look like for a neighborhood planning firm? Are the cities that you're working with already had this mentality? Does it take some work to get them to see the benefit of having more of a low risk, high return strategy? What does that look like as you're working with clients?
In some cases, cities that hire us, you have somebody who's a leader who already thinks that way. Or you have usually several people who kind of think that way, but they may not be experts in it. They may be a business owner or property owner, or someone else who doesn't think about these issues all day, and they need kind of a way to, I guess, sort of discipline it, to articulate it, and to focus what they're doing so that they can be effective. So it's a different way of looking at planning. A lot of times people who we work with directly just need a little bit of a spark in that direction, I think, to make things happen. Here's one of the important things. And when we first started this, we thought of this as something that we had to get hired by the city. But then when we did, the city had to be convinced, the city had to be the entity that was convinced to do these things. So we give a report to the city, and then you have people at the city staff, elected officials, who have to take the mantle. And if the city doesn't do it, it won't get done. Okay. It turned out that there were more opportunities than that, because we stumbled into a couple of things, largely based on conversations we'd had with others about how to do it. The first thing that we did was we based everything in an enormous amount of real meaningful stakeholder engagement. Now, when we say stakeholder engagement, both of those words have been stripped of much of their meaning. Mm-hmm. So when we say stakeholder, we mean anybody who cares about the place, or especially anybody who invests their time, money, and energy in a place. So in many cases, that's actually somebody who owns property or has a financial investment in the place, or it might be the pastor of a church. It might be someone in the historical society. It might be somebody who spends a lot of time in a place and a lot of money and so forth. So we look very broadly at stakeholders. When we say we engage them, what I would encourage everybody to do who wants to engage a community is go in the thesaurus and look up synonyms of the word engage, because that's what we really have to try to do. We have to involve people. We have to engross people. We have to immerse people, whatever other synonym you want to do and what we're doing. And you have to be really embedded in that process as much as possible in our experience. So what you're doing is you're saying, okay, we're going to focus on things that are immediate opportunities, not only those, but we're going to put a lot of focus onto those to try to jumpstart some things, because we're taking this strong towns approach. But we're going to do it in a process where we are really, really engaging people. So that means that, you know, sometimes you're spending 3 days walking up and down Main Street, meeting with the same business owners over and over again, having lunch with the same people, so that even within a few days, people start to know your name. You know, and sometimes you're meeting with a lot of different groups, you're spending a couple hours in the quilt shop, you're going to all of these events, you're really immersing yourself with the purpose of figuring out the things that you can do. So here's where the magic happens.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sure. So here's where the magic happens. And I love the example. I tell the example a lot about Garland, Texas, because it was the first time we really started putting this into application, and it really changed the way that we looked at everything. So we were coming in, and what we were doing for downtown Garland, it's an inner ring suburb of Dallas, has its own rail station, has a lot of really amazing assets in the downtown. Yeah. 3 theaters, 1,270 seats of theater, all sorts of things. And we were trying to figure out how to move the needle. And we came in with this idea that what we were essentially doing was kind of like a neighborhoods first type of reporting. Mm. We also spent about 40% of our contract talking to people, basically engaging people. Engaging people specifically around what they could do immediately.
Do you already have projects in mind at this time, Rick, or are you just kind of getting some grist for the mill about the kind of small actions y'all will take?
When we came in, I mean, we had things that we saw that were obvious to us, but we weren't necessarily coming in with an agenda of these are the things that need to be done. Right. So we came in with an open mind, but we saw things that, you know, we just based on our observations, we saw things that we saw as obvious opportunities. So we start talking to people, and the more we're talking to people, the more people are realizing that they could do some of these things themselves. So people are talking about, oh, well, I could do this, these window displays here. We're like, yeah, that's a great idea. Oh, well, there's already a monthly event, but couldn't I also do another monthly event that's a different type of market than what they already have downtown? And, you know, and we start talking, couldn't I put out ping pong tables and games and stuff out in the grass area here? So people started having all these ideas that they started implementing. So we talked to this guy, Robert Smith, this developer in downtown Garland. And he's showing us these buildings that he has. His family had owned property for decades and decades in this downtown square. He bought up this building that was burnt out, that had no roof, that was just a shell. And he just looks at it and he says, so what could we do with this? We're like, this is amazing. This could be an event space. Now, keep in mind, we had no idea that we would be doing anything before, except for submitting a report. And he's like, well, can you guys help me make it an event space? And we're like, yeah. So what is it going to be? Awesome. 3 months, 2 months? So he said, let's do it in 2 weeks. So we do the first event in 2 weeks. We had met with a guy who was thinking of opening up a brewery downtown. So we do a pop-up brewery where he just gives away samples of beer, right?
Yeah.
Something like 600 people showed up for this event.
Wow.
This is a downtown where people said, nothing can happen here that's going to attract young people. Forget it. Even though there's 1,270 seats of theater, there's nothing to do at night besides go to a play. So all of a sudden, we do a pop-up brewery and hundreds of people show up. And you have this very successful event space. I think he ended up paying $500 to get this started. And all that proved the market. And of course, the brewery opened up soon after that. It didn't require a big subsidy. The city didn't have to put a lot of money into it. All you had to do was find someone who was innovative, who wanted to do something good, and give him the tools and resources he needed to take things to the next level. And so if you go to downtown Garland now, Intrinsic Brewery, not only do they have the building that's adjacent to the sort of semi-outdoor event space that we created, but they've expanded into that event space as well. They're incredibly popular. They're very successful. Dare I say, not only is it some of the best barbecue that you can get in DFW, but it's some of the best beer that you can get as well. They have a fantastic brewery as well in this spot.
It's remarkable. And I imagine for listeners who are listening to this podcast that are working with neighborhood planning firms, they imagine and wish that they could do something similar. You know, maybe they're taking more of the traditional routes. They're coming in, seeing themselves as the experts, maybe not engaging as much as they could. Mm-hmm. Rick, for listeners who want to adopt more of this better brand report process, more of this ash and lime approach to working with cities and towns, what suggestions do you have for them? How can they adopt more of this incremental, get the city leaders involved approach to making their town stronger?
So a lot of it is really making sure that you value the things that require attention to detail, and that you have to start from an approach that says putting a lot of money into this place is not going to make this place great, and that you can't wait until you have a lot of resources in order to make something happen. So I think that seeing your job as really connecting with people on the grassroots, and seeing your job as doing things that are small bets that have a chance of creating a large impact, and paying attention to the metrics from when you do that, and acting on the scale of the human experience. You know, what is really cool about what we do is that, you know, one of the things that we want to do is help to inspire other people and plant seeds for another way to really operate. So it's our hope that people will go with the type of seeds that we plant. A lot of these things seem to be very simple, Which they can be. It's not necessarily always easy to actually figure out how to implement things like that. Can take a lot of work and a lot of focus. But, you know, I think that the more that we can have that mentality, the more that we'll be able to move in that direction. One of the...
Yes, and a great example of that, Rick, is the workshops that y'all have coming up.
We do.
Starting on May 17th. And it's awesome because even if these cities aren't a client of yours, you guys have just that servant's mentality to come in and help out. Can you tell us a little bit more about the workshops that you'll have coming up later this year?
Sure. So we are going to be doing a series of workshops in East Texas. So we're located here in Dallas. Once you go about 45 minutes east of us, you have the region of East Texas, which is it's kind of considered culturally where the Deep South begins once you get into that area. And there's about 40 really, really wonderful downtowns in this East Texas area. And one of the downtowns that's been very successful is the city of Sulphur Springs. They've taken a very kind of new urbanist approach. They probably wouldn't use the phrase strong towns, but they've really been thinking in that way for about 30 years, and they have just a fantastic downtown. They have something like 16 restaurants and several really great retail stores and just a very active, vibrant public space in this little downtown. So we're going to be teaching seminars oriented towards anybody who wants to improve their downtown. But it's kind of, these particular seminars are a little bit more focused on small towns, and we expect that most of the audience is likely going to be coming from other communities in East Texas. Yeah. A couple of things that tend to happen when most planning firms come into a smaller town that tends to make what they do not work. The first thing is that they make plans that are more expensive than these downtowns can afford. And a lot of times the things that they recommend are more expensive than these downtowns can afford. So a lot of times these places, these cities with small populations are asked, you know, save up $150,000 or whatever, we'll come up with this plan for your downtown. And then when you have it, a lot of times people are actually disappointed by what happens on the ground. So one of the things that we have that we see as an opportunity and one that's been successful, and we've worked in these towns, is the fact that you can come in and do things on a little bit smaller scale within the type of budget that these towns have and make a meaningful difference. The other thing that happens is a lot of these places are very understandably exhausted by a bunch of people coming in from places like Dallas and planners coming in from places like here and acting like they have all the answers and not having the humility to kind of come in and understand that they're here to listen as opposed to just come in with all the answers and all the expertise. So long story short, we're going to have a series of seminars that's going to focus on sort of where these places can start, where they can start looking at their codes, where they can start looking at things like bringing in new businesses, making improvements that can work within their budgets, supporting the people who they already have, what type of zoning codes might make sense, what type of investments might make sense, how they can make a place that's going to be something that they can, that is really thriving, that they can continue to be proud of, that matches their local character, but that also has a higher level of activity and economic development and so forth. So we're going to be working with them to kind of develop these strategies. We have a half day session that's starting out in Sulphur Springs, and then we plan to go to other towns as well.
Very good. And Rick, I want to revisit something you mentioned a little bit ago. You talked about how a lot of traditional neighborhood planning firms, you know, they'll take the most expensive project and just roll with that. Whenever y'all are working with clients, do you notice that sometimes the client is, you know, kind of has difficulty understanding, hey, let's not go with this big silver bullet, high risk, possibly low return project. Let's spread out our risk. Let's try 10 things. Let's see what works out. Are city leaders usually receptive to that approach? Does it take some persuasion for any listeners who listen to this podcast that want to have a similar approach? Any tips for them whenever they get kind of that feedback of, no, let's stick with the big project? Any tips for them to be able to pitch this more incremental, spread the risk out approach?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I don't mean to imply that all of the traditional firms focus only on sort of the silver bullets. I mean, a lot of them are doing very good work kind of with a higher level of detail than that, certainly. But I think that there's a perception sometimes among city leaders or among sometimes firms that if what you're suggesting is not a massive intervention, then that means that it's thinking small. And so it's like, well, it's almost like you're doing the little things, but the serious adults who are doing the serious things are going to focus on the stadium, and we won't worry about all those little details because we're going to think big. I think that it's a matter of we found it to be a matter of how you kind of explain the sort of approach and how you connect with people on an individual basis. I think that type of thinking is going to be with us for a long time. But I think that there really has to be a focus on the human experience. There really has to be a focus on creating great places. And there really has to be a focus on return on investment. And you have to kind of figure out who your audience is and what language they speak. And sometimes, you know, I don't think that because we deal as people who are planning in neighborhoods and downtowns, we have a lot of different constituents, right? Mm-hmm. So you might have a city council member who's all gung-ho about what you do. You might have another city council member who's more skeptical about it. And you're not going to necessarily communicate with all of them with the same message. But I think if you say, I'm here to come and listen, I'm here to figure out what tools and resources we can help you give, and I'm here to do things that can make a difference, people tend to be more receptive. But just like there's no silver bullet, no one silver bullet that can make a city better, I don't think there's one silver bullet that maybe can persuade people necessarily to think differently about how to invest in their city. I think it's just a process.
Yeah, that's a great point, Rick. And that totally shines through the example that you gave of downtown Garland as well. It's once you visited and started walking around, talked to Mr. Smith, people most time actually want to start with what they already have and just take that next incremental step. That's wonderful.
Yeah, you know, and it's I think that you focus on what people have, you focus on where people are, and I think that I don't see our role as necessarily with every person that they have to be sold on the entire Strong Towns kind of concept or perception. I think sometimes you listen to people and you figure out where you can help to address their problems and challenges. And I think where you can be a tool and a resource. And I think that, you know, the set of principles of how you really engage people, we found it to work in a lot of different contexts, and we found it to work among leaders in cities as well. So, you know, we will work in situations where we really see a lot of our role is to get the city, the Economic Development Corporation, the Chamber of Commerce, and other leaders in the same room and focused around a particular project, and then show how successful that specific project might be. We might not necessarily be changing the way the Economic Development Corporation thinks about subsidies in general, but we can show them how something can work well on a specific project and focus on that and get good results there and let what happens speak for itself.
Yes. Now, Rick, let's talk about how firms can make this a collaborative approach. You guys have something really cool going on with the Downtown Collaborative. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. So the Downtown Collaborative is a group that I co-founded that is basically about bringing in a lot of people with different skills and backgrounds that can work as a team. It's sort of an umbrella organization that can work as a team to focus on downtowns. So what we do is we have myself, three BL strategies, Brandon Palenker, who's a developer who worked in Long Island and helped to do some really incredible stakeholder engagement work over there. And we have Project for Public Spaces is a very key part of that as well. PPS, of course, is the leading place organization in the world. And has worked with in something like 3,000 communities in 45 countries around the world since its inception 40 years ago. We have Land Use USA. We have which does really amazing sort of economic analyses. We have Options Real Estate, Monty Anderson here in our region over here, who has co-founded the Incremental Development Alliance and has done really amazing sort of small, very hyper-localized development work here in this region. We don't have an engineering firm or a planning firm as part of us. We can sort of bring them on a project depending on what the specific needs are. But the idea is downtowns need to have a very integrated approach. When you're working on a downtown or another walkable urban neighborhood, maybe even if you're doing a strip mall retrofit, anywhere like that, that needs to have a real fine-grained detail. You need to bring in a lot of specialists who think the same way, who can focus on how do you create really good public spaces? How do you fill the storefronts? How do you get the right type of developers in? What are the longer-term infrastructure projects that you need to make, but also what are sort of the programming and event and other decisions that are needed in order to make this place work? The collaborative is brought together to as the idea that we can help to address all of those issues and get a lot of people who think the same way. The way that we have everything set up, we can start from something very modest, where we're doing an assessment of place to let you know what you are, what can be done immediately, and then what the plans are that you're going to need to make in the long term to reach your goals, and who we believe the partners are that we can help you do that. So we can help to take a place from the very beginning, start to do the initial assessment, analysis, engagement, recommendations for programming, recommendations for place management, and build up to scale as needed. And certainly having an organization like Project for Public Spaces involved in this helps to really bring a lot more capabilities to what we can do, since they have such exceptional experience in not only creating great public spaces, but using it as the catalyst to really change the entire dynamics of downtowns, neighborhoods, and cities in general.
Yeah. So Rick, thinking back to whenever you founded the Downtown Collaborative, say there's a listener who works at a firm that specializes in, I don't know, let's say working in rural towns, and they like this idea of forging some alliances with other firms that have a similar vision, of course, but different expertises. What was helpful for you as you were forming these alliances that could help other listeners that want to do something similar with their firm?
Well, I think that you know, especially if you're doing something where you have a very clear mission, I think that you'll make a lot of connections with like-minded people. This is a small world that we kind of live in. So I think really figure out what you do well and what you could use a little bit of help with. And, you know, what I did is I realized that there were things that I was good at, and there were things that my firm was good at, and there were things that we would need in order to have a more complete team to really help to guide the process from A to Z. So that might seem like a simple answer to the question, but I think that might be my answer to that.
Yeah, very good. Well, Rick, thanks much for sharing your wisdom with us. To wrap up the podcast, this is the question we end every episode with. How does this particular action, adopting Strong Towns principles for your neighborhood planning firm, make our cities and towns stronger?
I think that what we do is about giving people the tools and resources that can make their town stronger. So I would say what I would recommend for any firm is to see yourself as a resource to help people to operate in the best way that they can to make their town stronger.
Beautiful. Well, Rick, thanks so much again. If any listeners want to connect with you, learn more about what's going on with Ash and Lime, learn more about the book that you're working on, which I want to hear some more about,
where can people connect with you? Can go to ashlime.com, ashlime.com, or you can check out the Downtown Collaborative website, downtowncollaborative.com. And yeah, hit me up through any of those venues. I'm pretty active on under Twitter under Rick Adamski. That's R-I-K Adamski. Or hit me up on Facebook or LinkedIn or any other social media that might pique your interest.
Very good. Well, Rick, thanks much for sharing your wisdom with us.
Awesome.
We will chat very soon.
Thanks so much, Jacob.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.